Good morning. I thought we would read a story this morning. This is one of the stories from But God Remembered, which is a collection of sort of midrash stories specifically about women in the Bible. This story is about Bithya. The Pharaoh had a daughter named Meroe, who loved to bathe in the cool waters of the Nile. Her handmaids always joined her and stood by her side as she watched. One day, as Meroe knelt down and scooped up water to splash on her face, she saw a little basket flowing among the reeds. She knew it held a Hebrew child placed there to escape her father's terrible decree. Meroe loved her father, but not his hard-heartedness. The Pharaoh had commanded that all boys born to Hebrew women be drowned in the Nile. He feared that the Israelite slaves, who grew in number every day, would revolt against him. One of the slaves, Jochebed, had hidden her son from Pharaoh for as long as she could. Then she and her daughter Miriam put him in a wicker basket, sealed it with tar, and gently placed it on the Nile. They hoped that a kind stranger would rescue the child from the river, cradle and care for him. Meroe saw that the basket was drifting beyond her reach, so she asked her handmaids to help her fetch it, but they refused. "Surely there is a Hebrew child in the basket," they said. "Your father has commanded that all newborn Hebrew sons be killed. You are Pharaoh's daughter. You cannot disobey." "I am Pharaoh's daughter," she agreed, "but I am also Meroe, a woman who will not watch a baby drown." Meroe did not listen to the women nor to her father's command. She leaned forward as far as she could and extended her arms toward the floating cradle. The handmaids were astonished, as it seemed that her arms grew longer and longer until her fingers finally touched the edge of the basket, and she drew it toward her. Meroe gently lifted the basket, placed it on the riverbank, and opened it. There she saw a baby boy, more beautiful than any she had ever seen. The baby began to cry, and Meroe gathered him in her arms and held him close and loved him. "I will call you Moses, because in the language of my people, Moses means son, and you are the child I drew out of the water." Then Meroe saw two women watching from a distance, and she knew they must be from the boy's family. Meroe called Jochebed and Miriam out from hiding and spoke to them, "Care for this boy for 2 years, then return him to me, and I will protect him from harm." So Jochebed cared for her son for 2 years. She named him Uktiel. But God called the boy by the name Meroe had given him, Moses. And that is how he was to be known for all time. At the end of 2 years, Jochebed brought Moses to Meroe. And Meroe brought him to the Pharaoh and said, "Father, for many years I have longed for a child. Every day I have wept and prayed by the Nile River. Now my prayers have been answered. The gods of the Nile have given me this boy. See how beautiful he is. I call him Moses, my son, because I drew him out of the water." Now Pharaoh thought that this boy might be a Hebrew child and not a gift of the Nile. But Pharaoh loved his only daughter. And because she loved the boy, he lifted Moses up and hugged him. This is how it came to pass that Moses lived in Pharaoh's palace. When Moses grew up, he wandered outside the palace and came upon an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. Moses struck the Egyptian and the man died. When Pharaoh heard of this, he would no longer listen to his daughter. He sought to kill Moses, and Moses had to flee. Many years later, Moses returned to the Pharaoh's palace and said to him, "Let my people go." But Pharaoh would not listen. Secretly, Moses met with Moreau and pleaded with her to help him. Moreau said, "Moses, if it were in my power to let your people go, you would be free today. But my father no longer listens to me. I have tried to convince him to allow your people to leave Egypt. But as soon as he agrees, he changes his mind. Be careful, Moses. My father is angry, and his heart is hard. For you, I will speak with him again. And when the time comes for you to go out of Egypt, remember me." Moses promised Moreau that no matter what plagues and hardships would befall her people, no harm would come to her. 9 times Pharaoh agreed to let Israel go. 9 times he changed his mind and brought disaster upon his people. Then a final terrible plague spread over all of Egypt, and Pharaoh let the people of Israel go. It was in the middle of the night when Moses went to see Moreau one last time. "Come with us out of Egypt," Moses pleaded. "I cannot go with you. I belong here," she said. Moreau embraced Moses for a long time, and then she tore herself away. "Do not delay," she urged, "or my father will change his mind again." She swallowed hard and held back tears. "Goodbye, Moses, and may the God of freedom bless you." Moses said, "Because you loved a stranger as your son, I will teach my people to care for the stranger, so they will remember you. Peace to you, Moreau, and may the God of all people bless you." Moreau was pleased for Moses, but sad for her people. Moreau watched Moses walk away until she could no longer see him in the distance. Then she turned back to comfort her father. So Moses led Israel through the sea to freedom. The people told stories about Moreau and how she had saved Moses, a stranger, and loved him. Moses taught, "You shall not oppress the stranger, for you know the heart of the stranger, having yourselves been strangers in the land of Egypt." But after a while, the people forgot the woman who had rescued Moses from the Nile and no longer knew her name or told her story. But God remembered Moreau and blessed her. "As you saved Moses and called him your son, even though he was not your son, so your name will no longer be Moreau, but Bitya, which means daughter of God. It is said that Bitya, daughter of God, sits at the entrance to one of the gates of paradise. And whenever a stranger is welcomed somewhere in the world, it is Bitya who bestows God's blessing." The end. This morning we hear the story of the 10 bridesmaids. And again, this is one of those parables that doesn't wind up on anyone's favorite list, because it leaves us, I think, all terrified. Who among us, after all, has shown up unprepared for what was in front of us? And who among us, even if you are the most prepared and well-planned and organized person, which is not me, but even if you are, who has not come and heard what it is Jesus asks us to do and left feeling convinced that no amount of organization, planning, or preparation can help you there? There is always, it seems, something more that Jesus asks of us than is easy or sometimes even possible to do. It is worth noting, however, that the lectionary does not always help us. The lectionary, I think, is a fine and wonderful invention. I'm very glad we have it, in part, I will admit this even today, because it makes me preach on and therefore study and learn parts of the Bible I wouldn't choose to otherwise. This would be one of the parts I would be happy to skip over. And the next parable, which I don't have to preach on tomorrow, and get right to the end of Matthew 25, which is the goats and the sheep and what you have done for the least of these you have done for me, and that one I can get behind. And it would be sad and unfortunate if I skipped these first two and went straight there. Just as it is in some way sad and unfortunate that in the lectionary we break these up into three different weeks. If you pull out your Bibles when you get home and look at Matthew 25, or if you look it up online, you will see that there's no pause. Jesus goes straight from this parable to the parable of the talents to the parable of the last judgment, where the goats and the sheep are separated based on what they do for the least of those around us. Now, there was no scribe who followed Jesus around and wrote everything down exactly as it happened. This is apparent if you sit down and read even sections of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The stories are all a little different. But what we do know is that these were early versions of the stories the apostles who did follow Jesus around told to the people who came to hear stories about Jesus. What we do know is that these are the four versions that the church and that people of faith have honored as the most helpful for us in learning to follow Jesus. So I do not believe that is an accident, that this one time, because they're getting near the end of the book and it's the writers getting tired, that they forgot to sort of set each of these stories up individually. I don't believe that's what happened. And believe that the people who told these stories wanted these three stories read together. And while we do that as best as the lectionary allows us, because really, if I'm also being honest, none of us wants to sit through all of Matthew 25 in one go. It is not a short chapter. We miss something when we stop at the end of this parable. The next one helps a little bit. So in the next one, everyone's given the same opportunity. They're given instructions, and we can sort of enter into that parable differently than we do this one, where we don't get the instructions to the bridesmaids. We don't really know, except that it tells us that they all should have been wise enough to bring oil. But I think it is that last parable, the parable of the last judgment, where Jesus talks about the time when everyone will be gathered together and the goats and the sheep will be separated. And what makes a sheep is how they have visited those who were sick or in prison, how they have offered clothes to those who need them, food to the hungry and water to the thirsty. And what makes a goat is that they didn't do all of these things because they did not see the person of Jesus and the neediest people around them. Still might not be a parable that sits too easily with us, but I think we can enter into it differently. So what happens if we pull some of that last parable in this set of three, in this set of three parables that are meant to go together, that are meant to be read and understood together, back to the first one? There are wise and foolish, or sheep and goats, in all of them, but in this one, with the bridesmaids, what changes might be the oil. What the foolish bridesmaids didn't bring that night as they sat out waiting wasn't just the extra oil they had on the shelf that they forgot to grab while they were in a rush. But much like the goats, maybe it was all of those times they had a chance to see Jesus and those around them who had needs and wants and things they could have helped. And they chose not to. Maybe the wise bridesmaids are just the sheep who, when someone was in need, when there was too little in someone else's house and too much in their own, said, "I can help." And that extra oil they brought becomes symbolically all of those times they saw Jesus in the least and the lost and the lonely and reached out to make them not the least, but the most important person in that moment. I think good news can be found when we read this parable in close conversation with the parable we'll hear in 2 weeks. Except, if that is what the oil is representing, if this is moving into the territory of allegory and not just parable, then going out to buy more oil was never a solution that would work. Just as the goats who are gathered in front of Jesus at the last judgment in the last parable can't go out and visit the sick and clothe the naked and feed the hungry all of a sudden and change what has happened, neither can these foolish bridesmaids. In our first reading, we hear Joshua standing before the gathered people, people who have come into Jerusalem, who have made their home in the promised land, and saying, "The choice is yours." And he lays it out for them in fairly clear terms. You can follow the God who brought you out of slavery, the God who brought Abraham to this land, the God who promised you everything we now stand on the edge of having, or not. Choose this day who you will serve. And Israel agrees with Joshua, and they all choose to serve the Lord. Now, we know how that works out. Not always that well. But I think we need to read that closely alongside the parables that we are about to hear and have started to hear this morning. We get a choice. We get to decide how we will live this day. We get to decide where we will look for Jesus. And spoiler alert, if you start looking for Jesus, you start finding him in all sorts of inconvenient places. I don't think the foolish bridesmaids were awoken that night when the bridesmaid came and the groom came and surprised. I think they got there through a series of choices they had made. Now, we know that Israel makes a choice that day, and they do not always live well into that. And we know that our God is a God of second chances. So we know that there is no great tally score God is keeping. We don't earn points when we do something well, something where we look and we see Jesus and we respond to the need of the person who is also Jesus for us in that moment, And we don't lose points when we fail to do that. But I also believe that God honors our struggle to make the best choice we can every time. But it is still our choice to make. It is our choice to stand with Joshua as he says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Even when we get it wrong, and we will. Even when we fight over how to do that best. Even when we feel lost. Even when we know we have fallen short of the challenge that is in front of us. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Amen.